Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Football Friday on The Fan.
Look, somebody!
This is a Football Friday edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
Football Friday with Danny and Dusty on 1080.
Take the fight to them.
The Fan.
Hour number three, Danny and Dusty on this Friday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day. Back to a little bit of normalcy with the holiday in our rearview mirror. This is the last show for me this year, as I'm going to be heading down to Pasadena for the Rose Bowl, Oregon and Ohio State. If you missed our conversation about the Rose Bowl matchup, you can check it out in the audio vault on the Odyssey app or 1080thefan.com. Will be working feverishly to get the podcast out as soon as possible when the show's over.
Because sooner it's out, the sooner I go home.
Yeah. We have a firing in the NBA. The Sacramento Kings have fired Mike Brown today. This following a 14-point fourth quarter lead that they blew against the Detroit Pistons of all teams, and that dropped the Kings to 12th in the Western Conference. Yikes, dog. Brown signed a three-year deal extension back in June and only made it 31 games into the season. That is absolutely brutal, man. And this was a Kings team that people were really high on, like making moves forward, starting to have that young core or a core that was clicking on all cylinders. They had won like 48 and 46 games over the last couple of seasons, and then boom, it unravels so quickly. They're 13 and 18 this year, and they lose on a – do you see that play by Jaden Ivey yesterday?
No, I missed that one.
4-point play with 3 seconds remaining. They lose 114-113.
I see why he got fired.
It seems like when it rains, it pours. And for Mike Brown, he out in Sacramento as the Kings head coach. So pour one out for Mike Brown and the Sacramento Kings.
You know
they're
what?
Not going to be lighting the beam over that.
I'm not going to pour one out.
I won't.
Think,
he's
I
not
have
dead. He's
use.
Alive.
Yeah, well, and like... they were kind of a one-hit wonder. Like, they had a year where
they
everything clicked.
They were cones.
Well, but they went to the playoffs the one year, and then they ran into Golden State, and they got smacked. Yeah. And then the other year, they were like a play-in team. Like, they barely got in. It doesn't even count.
Yeah.
Play-in doesn't count.
Mm. Okay. All right. Fair enough. College football playoff wasn't the only losers from the... going head-to-head with the NFL. The first round of the college football playoffs, when the Chiefs Texans were playing and the Steelers Ravens were playing on Saturday, the Texans Chiefs drew 15.5 million viewers, while the Steelers Ravens 15.4 million viewers. Those outdrew in the television ratings all of the college football playoff games. Tennessee, Ohio State, 14.3. Indiana, Notre Dame on Friday, standalone, 13.4. Clemson, Texas, 8.6 million. SMU, Penn State, 6.4 million viewers for those games. They're not alone, the college football playoff, in getting beat by the NFL. Did you see what the numbers were for the Christmas Day games?
It was almost triple, wasn't it?
It was quadrupled. It was more than quadrupled. It was almost quintupled there. The NFL drew 24.2 million viewers, average viewers, for their Netflix doubleheader of the Steelers, Chiefs, and Ravens, Texans. Okay? Think about that.
Those weren't even good games.
No.
They were bad.
No. Combine. Those games were decided by 48 points. Chiefs won by 19, Ravens won by 29. The NBA has owned Christmas Day, and this is the part that's jarring about the big numbers that the NFL took. The NFL with 24.2 was streaming on Netflix, which is absolutely wild to think that people went to Netflix somewhere brand new to watch games, and they all streamed both of those games. 24.2 average viewership. The average viewership for the NBA's quadruple header, 5.25 million. And that's on ABC and ESPN. Think about that. Like, that's the more accessible avenue to watch those games. The four games that were on Christmas Day combined were decided by 25 points combined. The Chiefs won by 19 and the Ravens won by 29. And they dwarfed the NBA's ratings. Now, this is not a thing to say the NBA is dying and the viewership is down. Those things, sure, that can be true. But viewership was actually up 84% on Christmas Day for the games combined to last year's ratings.
I have a question, though.
But I think it's, hold on, this just says what the NFL is. The NFL is a giant. And the NFL is something that if they want a day, they're going to come and they're going to rip that day away. And if you think for a second that the NFL is going to say, no, this was just a one-off, we'll give it back. Nope, they're going to come for it. And they're probably going to add a game. The NFL adding a third game and making it a triple header, I could see it happening, adding a fourth game as well, because what they did was they staggered this to where you had those Saturday games where you flipped opponents, right? It was Steelers, Ravens, and Texans, Chiefs on Saturday. Then they went and they played them on a Wednesday. Next year, they won't even need to do that because of the fact that the game is on a Thursday. So you could play Christmas is on Thursday. So you could play on a Sunday, and then you could pick any imagination of teams that will play on that Thursday. And if the NFL wants to, they're going to put three or four games on that Thursday, on Christmas Day.
Well, and here was going to be my pushback. ESPN is more accessible here, I would say, like in our country. But if you want to get foreign fans, and especially if you want to get younger fans, I might make the argument that Netflix is more accessible. And I'm sure, like, numbers-wise, there's more people that have access to traditional cable and traditional TV, but for people my age, like, it's easier for me to get a game on Netflix than it is to get a game on ESPN or to get a game on ABC.
Yep.
I think the other thing, like...
Well, and here's the thing. We have a text coming in that ESPN not as accessible as Netflix. 70 million households in the United States alone. Netflix is 84.8, but every home can get the ABC games, and that is the big one.
Right. Well, and obviously, like, this has been the NBA's day. It's clear that football is trying to take it over. But I think it also shows that there are more stars, or at least more stars that people care about, than in the NFL than in the NBA. Like, when I think about the NBA, there was only one game on Christmas Day that interested me. it was the Lakers, then it was Golden State, and it's because it's LeBron versus Steph. None of the other games interested me, and I'm a big sports guy. So what does that say about your average sports fan? Well, they're going to be more likely to tune in on the Netflix game, one, because it's easier to get, and I also do think it was a diabolical and smart move by the NFL, because now you can't flip channels. If you make it a Fox game, you can flip channels. If you make it CBS, you can flip. You can't flip on Netflix.
And a lot of people would have, because the NBA games were far more compelling. They were better games. They were, I mean, that's not even questioned right now.
And you're right. You're 100% you're right, but I also think that the average fan, especially the average female fan, is going to be more likely to tune in to the Kansas City game because Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift has become that big of a deal.
Oh, yes, they have.
And like, I'm not.
Swifties will unite.
And I'm not saying.
The Beyonce being the halftime show of the game following.
Right.
The NFL played this absolutely perfectly. And the fact that that quadruple header was on ABC and ESPN. I mean, that's where the NBA is like, damn. But the people that I don't want to make it bigger than it is because of the fact that this is what the NFL is. The NFL is king. Yeah. And nobody was under the impression that the NBA was close to the viewership or popularity of the NFL. But I think that what was at play there was the NFL. They did a testosterone check right there. Mm-hmm. And they said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make it harder for people to get to the game. We're going to put it in a place that people aren't familiar with, and we'll see how many we get. And that number was damn near five times what is the most accessible channel in ABC to get, and ESPN, somewhere where people are programmed to go and watch their sports at. And I think the NFL is, that was a flex by the NFL, and it worked. It worked in a big way. For the National Football League, and the games weren't very good. They just weren't.
It's also a way for Netflix to finally get their toe in the ring too. Like, Amazon has been dominating the streaming like sports game, and it's finally Netflix's opportunity. Now Netflix wouldn't be able to bring the Avengers of football together like they did. You're not going to be able to get Manti Te'o and RG3 and Kay Adams and Mina Kimes for your pregame because they all have contracts with different entities. They wouldn't be able to do that if Netflix made a pitch to get a game, one game a week, like Amazon Prime has. But I think that Netflix showed that they could do it, and they could do it in a way that would get sports fans to tune in. So I also think that while it's the NFL showing, like, flexing their muscles of, like, look at how big of a deal we are, it's also Netflix of, like, all right, now we have a seat at the table too, and we can look to make a bigger push going forward, and don't be shocked when they're all on streaming.
Especially after the debacle that was the Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight, people were saying like the glitchiness of that. I mean, that fight was buffering. Yeah, they worked out the kinks, and I think that one thing that we can all agree on now is that even from the production level, Jake Paul's boxing matches are just conning us so you can make a butt ton of money.
Right. No, 100%.
Fights aren't good. The product on TV isn't good. Netflix knocked it out of the park with the NFL on Christmas Day. We got NFL Week 17 continuing, already three games in the rearview mirror, and we get some Saturday football. We got a triple header of Saturday games tomorrow, and a lot of them have playoff implications. Actually, all of them with playoff implications. And Jim Harbaugh, he's not worried one stinking bit about his L.A. boys in powder blue heading to Foxborough. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Got a triple dip of NFL action tomorrow, Saturday, because the NFL is just saying all the days, ours, we own them now. You've got 10 a.m., Chargers at the Patriots, 1:30, Broncos, Bengals, and Cardinals and Rams at 5 o'clock. That's a good little trio of games that I don't think they were expecting to have the impact that they would at this juncture, because Chargers and Patriots obviously at 9-6 right now, the Chargers are in the thick of a playoff hunt, and they have an opportunity to solidify themselves as a playoff team. Getting to 10 wins is going to be huge, and that win over Denver just last week is even bigger now for the Chargers. But they do have to go to Foxborough, where it's supposed to be cold. It's going to be a little bit gray, damp. And the boys from L.A., we talk about warm weather teams going to cold weather places. Jim Harbaugh was asked about it and had the most Harbaugh answer imaginable this week.
We had a little rainfall last week, one day of practice. That was great to have that. But most all of us have played in those kind of games, you know, or grew up in that kind of weather, you know. And bottom line is, I mean, these guys are young, they're healthy, and their heart pumps warm blood.
Yeah.
You know, pumps it from the arteries.
Yep.
To the veins, to the tributaries, to the capillaries, you know, throughout their whole body. You just play ball. Been my experience. Now, I might have got that in the wrong order there. It's well documented. I'm not a doctor. But I know it's warm blood. Young, healthy, athletic guys are able to generate.
Jim Harbaugh, I think he would... I think he wants to do, like, blood transfusion with young people. Right?
I don't think that he ever... like took a class. I think he Michael Scotted that. That is the ultimate start a sentence, not know where it ends, and just keep going, right?
But hey, not a doctor. Well documented. I'm not a doctor. Yeah, I know that. We are warm blooded young men here. We are not cold blooded. We are warm blooded young men. Give me that young blood. Yikes! I love Jim Harbaugh.
It's awesome.
He 100%. Michael Scotted that. He was like, I know where I kind of want to go with this. Don't know how I'm going to stick the landing. Don't really care if I stick the landing or not, because I always have the not a doctor that I can fall back on. I love that that was his response. And now I hope that they beat the Patriots by like 40. And that becomes the new mantra. Who's got it better than we do? Nobody. Warm-blooded young men. Let's go, Harbaugh. And he's just speaking from his own experience. He's like, yeah, you know, we all come from places that are cold. Do they? Does every one of your players, like, he's like, we got rain a day last week. That was nice. I'm pretty sure Justin Herbert's probably adapted to life in Southern California over rainy, dreary Oregon, right? Pretty sure that's probably happened by now. That's the most intriguing part of this game, besides the fact that the Chargers can lock themselves into more solid footing when it comes to the playoffs. I believe they can get a playoff spot with a win, correct?
I believe you're correct.
And then after that one, you have the Broncos and Bengals, which I don't know how, but somehow, some way, both of these teams are still eligible for the playoffs. I know the Broncos are because they're 9-6, and they've played really good football and above their skis this year. I think if anybody were to tell you that the Broncos would have just as good of a season as the Los Angeles Chargers at the beginning of the year, you probably would have said y'all are crazy. But here is Denver, 9-6, and they can officially knock out Cincinnati from the playoff hunt. And then I think with a loss, they've got to hope because of the way that they knock out the Colts too, because the Colts are 7-8, and the best that they can get to is 9-8 on the year. I mean, those are two big games for both the Chargers and the Broncos. And then the nightcap, look, the Rams, oddly enough, are still in a fight with the Seahawks for the NFC West, and the only way the Seahawks are going to get into the playoffs is if the Rams end up losing out and they win out, or they beat the Rams lose this week to the Cardinals. And even if they beat the Cardinals, I think that the Seahawks, if they win the week 18, they have a shot based on strength of schedule or strength of opponent's record to get in over the Rams. But I kind of want the Cardinals to win based on I want the Week 18 to have everything on the line. And think of the games that we could have in Week 18 that are determining divisions, right? Or the number one overall seed, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. You could have Chiefs and Broncos with playoff implications on the line. The Chiefs and what they did on Christmas Day, we talked about the ratings. The Kansas City Chiefs offense is fixing itself, just like I had faith that they would do. Mahomes getting the ball out quick. Xavier Worthy's able to play in different positions and different spots on the field now that Hollywood Brown is there. Travis Kelce, who I said this at the very beginning of the year, they're not going to lean on Travis Kelce because they don't need to lean on Travis Kelce. It's a marathon for the Chiefs offense. Mm-hmm. They're trying to figure out how their pieces work. Isaiah Pacheco now back and healthy. Their offensive line is not great, but they're finding ways to play around that, right? Mm-hmm. So that game could have big playoff implications, and it's in Mile High. You have the Vikings and the Lions could be playing for the number one overall seed in the NFC in that game in Week 18. You have the Seahawks and the Rams, which could be for the NFC West title if the Rams lose this week to the Cardinals, which is what I'm kind of hoping that it happens there. I would love for those games to have all of the impact in Week 18. But as it stands tomorrow, you get the Cardinals and the Rams, and we'll see what happens. But good Saturday games, all on the NFL Network?
Aside from the beginning one, probably. The one that starts it all off. No offense.
10 a.m.?
Maybe Drake May looks...
No.
Decent. He's been okay this year. You could see him maybe look decent. The Chargers' defense has been... taking a small step back, like
how
maybe.
Many Drake May, Justin Herbert comps will we see? Guys that are athletic, can run, have just got cannons attached to their shoulders, and their stature, the way they're both just massive human beings.
I don't know that I've seen any comparisons between them.
No,
two.
I'm saying we're going to see them tomorrow.
See, because
they're going to be like, hey, he's got a strong arm. Justin Herbert is way better than Drake May. But strong arm, big, tall, white guy, more athletic than he looks.
See, I kind of think it usually more so goes to Herbert and Nix because it's the easy, like, Oregon,
those guys
Oregon.
They're not the same.
Yes, but Oregon, Dusty, you're not understanding. Oregon.
Compare.
Dude, come on. There are legitimate experts that compare Mariota to Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah.
Again, Oregon.
Oregon. They both wear number 8. Bo Nix, Justin Herbert wear number 10.
They're both from Hawaii.
Yep.
Compare. Compare.
The similarities are there.
The similarities are endless. They're both human beings.
Yeah.
They're American.
Yeah. Yeah. Both Heisman finalists, 1-1. The other did not.
I'll tell you right now, I'm going to be locked in on the Rams and Cardinals because I need my Seahawks to be playing for something.
Right?
I need
Let's get that.
Even if they only put up 6 points.
What we do need to get to, though, is how the Seahawks put themselves in this place.
Because they're stupid.
Well, do you want the bright spot? Second half shutout.
They won. The defense has looked good at times.
I don't. Yeah. Yeah.
They've looked good more than they've looked bad.
Boy, I think it was a bigger indictment on the Chicago Bears. And we'll get to that after Will with SportsCenter.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
All right, last night we saw the Seattle Seahawks pick up their 9th win of the season against the Chicago Bears. 6-3 that final. That game was hard to watch offensively really from start to finish. No, I will not say from start to finish. I thought that was a great opening drive for Seattle. They marched the ball right on down the field against the Bears defense. And I was like, points. We're going to get some points out of this game. Boy, was I wrong. 6-3, the final score. You know the last time that the Bears allowed 10 or fewer points? You know when that was?
They said it. Was it against? It wasn't against the Seahawks last time they played, was it?
No, it wasn't. I don't think it was. No, the last time that the Chicago Bears allowed 10 or fewer points was October 10th of 2021.
Yuck.
Oh, no, excuse me. January 2nd of 2022. Same season, they beat the New York Giants 29-3. They went 6-10 that year, and it was the Red Rifle, Andy Dalton, who stepped in and guided them to their 29-3 win. Last night, a 6-3 victory for the Seattle Seahawks. There's some real questions right now with Seattle's offense and the rhythm of their passing game with Ryan Grubb. And you mentioned this earlier, that it's basically two camps, right? Either you don't like Geno or you don't like DK Metcalf. And can I just say, I think both of those things can be true at the same time of where the biggest fault lies with where their offense is. Because there comes a point where you've got to just start force-feeding a guy, right? And three targets for DK Metcalf in that game, that's far too few, because three targets, he had three catches for 42 yards. And when you're going up against a defense that has been absolutely sliced and diced over the course of this year, and especially since Matt Eberflus got fired, we've talked about how their defense has had a regression. They gave up, 38, 30, and 34 games their last three. And one of them was to a completely decimated San Francisco 49ers offense. They gave up 38 points to. That is the discouraging part. The great part is Seattle got a win, and their defense played really damn well. Caleb Williams has been risk-averse in throwing the football. Reek Woolen ends up sealing that game with an interception and putting that thing on ice. Giving up only 3 points in an NFL game, really damn hard. Really dang hard. Except for the fact that the New England Patriots also did it to the Chicago Bears earlier in the season when they were only able to muster 3 points. Their offense has not been good. And you can see why. Shane Waldron gets fired. You have your interim offensive coordinator then boosted to interim head coach. You see why their offense has been bad. But Seattle's offense, that's why it's a discouraging part of just a 6-3 victory. You keep your playoff hopes alive. But I saw this, and I know that there's some Seahawks fans that are out there that are like, man, kind of just want this thing to end.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm always going to be a glass half full in the fact that just give me the opportunity in the playoffs. Crazier things have happened, right? The Beast Quake team wasn't supposed to win, wasn't even supposed to be there, yet they found a way to win. My issue and what's so frustrating is the offensive line has been atrocious, and it's been atrocious for years. Like, this is an issue that has not been fixed. In particular, it's been on the interior part of the offensive line. It feels like with Cross and when Lucas can stay healthy, it doesn't happen much. But when he is healthy, it feels like those two kind of lock down the tackle spots. The guard and center play has been bad. And then you start off the game, you're not having K-9 out there, you're going Charbonnet and McIntosh, and you run the ball down Chicago's throat. Now, they're not a great defense, but that's still a positive sign, like, hey, you can run the football. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the game, Chicago makes an adjustment. You can't run the ball at all. You're not force-feeding DK. You're not force-feeding Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who's a top five wide receiver in the league right now when it comes to receiving yards. He already has over 1,000 yards.
Yep.
And you're not finding a way to get them the football, yet you're running a screen pass for Pharaoh Brown. Like, what? That doesn't make sense in my eyes. And there's a lot of blame to go around. You're an average football team. It is what it is. You have holes, and you need to fix those holes. And it, as a Seahawks fan, it does feel like you're building towards fixing those holes. It feels like you have the right guy in McDonald to make the changes that need to be done, because this defense struggled really badly in the middle part of the season when they had a couple injuries go their way. They make a big change. They get rid of their top tackler. They just straight up cut him. They make a trade to go get Ernest Jones. They promote a rookie, right? And there have been big changes they've made. Witherspoon in that game was unbelievable. He was all over Bears wide receivers, and then the plays that he was making in the screen game where he was getting blocked by bigger receivers in Allen and Odunze, and he straight up won those one-on-one battles.
I'll tell
up.
You what. That was the most, like, if you want something to hang your hat on, Witherspoon was incredible. Like, you never want a corner to be leading your team in tackles. When he has three tackles for loss, you'll take it.
Yep.
You're going to take that 10 times out of 10, man. He was very impressive. And I also think, though, that also goes to how broken the Bears are and the predictability of the Bears formationally and tendency wise. He sniffed everything out. You don't do that as a corner unless there are wicked tendencies that you're catching on film. But that also goes to Mike McDonald has his guys ready to go. Right. And he has them coached up because he was making tackles for loss. He sacked Caleb Williams at one point. Like, in Caleb Williams, my goodness, he may not throw interceptions, but that man takes a ton of sacks. And in a new offensive mind cannot come fast enough for the Chicago Bears. Coming out of Christmas, it was Pete Carroll is interested in the job. I love Pete Carroll. I think he's a great coach. You do not want a 73-year-old to come in, because all you're doing is you're saying that by the end of your rookie deal, that quarterback is going to be on a fourth head coach, because you have Eberflus, Thomas, Carroll, and then whoever the next head coach is going to be. That is just a Band-Aid. Go and Ben Johnson. Yeah. If he's interested in that job, go give it to Ben Johnson and see what he can do. Even though I would use caution with Ben Johnson, because Ben Johnson is also the offensive coordinator for the best offensive line in football, and that is always a scary proposition. How good and creative can you be when you have one of the worst offensive lines in football, not the best offensive line in football?
Right. I think the other thing with this Bears team offensively is you went into the season thinking that you got all this help for Williams, and it doesn't feel like it's there. Like, the offensive line, everyone that you banked on taking a step forward, not a single one of them did. The run game with Swift is non-existent, so there's nothing there that's really helping him. Keenan Allen, it feels like it's done, man. Like, it really feels like it's done. DJ Moore, it took him halfway through the season before he stopped pouting, stopped being a baby. And then, like, Romo Odunze, like, he's a very good wide receiver. He's going to be a very good wide receiver. He's a rookie. It takes time. It takes all this time to build.
A couple dropsies, too.
Right. And so, like, there's a lot of people who don't really watch the games. They see the highlights, and then they go, oh, well, you got to blame Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams is not perfect. He has his faults. When I watched that football game, he got sacked, what, seven times, eight times?
Yeah.
Two of them were on him. Two of them were good plays by Seahawks defensive linemen. That's why they get paid a lot of money. And then there's another three or so that are in there where it's like, well, it's kind of on him. It's also kind of on them. Like, maybe he grows out of it. Does the O-line figure it out as they get going? Is it a coverage sack? Like, there's things that he still has to do. But to write him off, that's insane to me. But to still think that he can reach his peak, that also seems a little bit insane to me.
I think that with better coaching and improved offensive line play, a lot of the ills of Caleb Williams can be fixed, right? Because a lot of those sacks are, you get the right coach in who can get through and prepare Caleb Williams the right way, you're checking out of a lot of the plays that end up going negative for the Chicago Bears offense.
Right.
And that is so much of quarterback play that we just get overlooked, is the quarterback and play caller preparation and being on the same page. It gets you out of so many negative plays, whether it is in your run game or sacks. It gets you out of a mess. And that is huge. And they just don't have it. They didn't have it at the beginning of the year with Waldron. We all knew that heading into the year. JSN said it on, you know, media row at the Super Bowl last year. Good luck with that, you right. know. It was kind of doomed from a play-calling perspective. And then I give the Bears credit. They did try to go out and put weapons around him, right? Keenan Allen is old. Roma Dunze is having a lot of his touches taken away from him because Caleb Williams is like, well, we got to feed kind of everybody here. You know, mm-hmm. DJ Moore was pouting because he liked Justin Fields because guess what Justin Fields did?
Fed him
when
the ball.
When he threw the ball to DJ Moore, right? That's why I loved the fact that the Commanders this year said, yeah, we're not going to go and overspend on a wide receiver for Jaden Daniels because a young quarterback with a dominant or a diva wide receiver, it does not teach him how to quarterback. Mm-hmm. It teaches him who to feed, and in the loudest mouth gets the food first, right? I think that it is one of the issues that we see in Philadelphia, right? With A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has earned the right to distribute the ball to whoever he sees fit.
Right.
But we see A.J. Brown, he's got issues with whatever, how big or small they may be. And I tend to think it's relatively small. But you see these things percolate when you have a quarterback who, and Jalen Hurts, the dude has won, right? Usually that's what it takes, is winning. Well, he's still a young quarterback, and the hierarchy in an NFL locker room is real. And the fact that A.J. Brown's like, nope, I want more touches, I want mine, that is where a young quarterback, and then we have this pushing and pulling. Is the organization protecting the quarterback too much? Is it the head coach, and is Nick Sirianni an idiot? Now, sometimes it's as simple as the hierarchy of an NFL locker room can get sideways on you. And I think you see that in Chicago right now, in that Caleb Williams has a paralysis by analysis, yep, of which guy he needs to kind of force feed the ball. But on the flip side, you would hope Seattle would force feed DK Metcalf when things are stalling out offensively, right?
Seems like a pretty easy game plan. Oh, I have the biggest wide receiver and the strongest in the NFL. Yep. Why don't I just throw him the ball? The other thing about it, when they did throw him the ball, like the one that I'm thinking of, DK made an incredible catch. It was like a 20-yard little out that he ran, and Geno Smith basically put the ball on the ground. Like, if DK didn't have an incredible finger strength catch, DK only ends up having two catches and probably only around 20 yards. I want to say that play was about a 15 to 20 yard play.
Yeah.
If he puts it on DK, DK can turn and run and make someone miss or run through someone. And so there's a lot of frustration right now at DK because of a penalty that he took. That's the first type of penalty like that he's taken since week two, right? Like, he was going at it with Tyreek Stevens. And you don't love that. Be smarter, especially for the Seahawks, who are one of the higher penalized teams in the NFL, if not the highest. But at the same time, I want some fight out of my guys. I want some
dog
fire
in you.
Yeah. It's clear that he's not going to get pushed around. And I'm okay with that. And it feels almost like, at times, him not wanting to be pushed around gets viewed at negatively, mm-hmm, by certain people in the football community. And I just disagree with it. Not that I am completely team DK over team Geno. They both have their things that they do well, and they both have their things that they need to work on, one more so than the other. But at the end of the day, you're going to go into LA this next week. You might have a shot at the playoffs. You might not. To me, it's all about finding a way to get the ball to DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Yep. Show everyone that you can find a way to get them the ball. And sometimes, even when they're covered, they're not covered. Throw a 50-50 ball up for DK every once in a while. I'm okay if that's the interception that you throw. I'm not okay when you have, you know, no offense to Pharaoh Brown, but Pharaoh Brown double covered in the red zone and you try and force it in there, or try and force one into A.J. Barner, right? Force the ball to your premier stars. Force them to your top wide receivers on the edge.
Hey, the big news, Seahawks, doesn't matter what it looks like. It's a win. And they're still alive, albeit by the thinnest of margins. They are still alive with the Thursday night football win 6-3. 6-3 in Chicago. All right. We had media availability down here today in Eugene. Tosh Lapoy taking the podium. Don't hear from the coordinators all that often in extended interviews, but for the Rose Bowl media availability, we heard from Tosh Lapoy today what the Oregon Ducks were focusing on as Ohio State, Tennessee, and the rest of the first round was playing. Danny and Dusty on the Fan.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
All right, this is the final show for me for the new for the old year. I won't be back on these airwaves until the new year, 2025, as I'm going to be heading down for the Rose Bowl on this weekend and not going to be on the show Monday, Tuesday, but you can hear me in the pregame show leading up to kickoff between Oregon and Ohio State, where I'll be on the sidelines with Jerry and Jorgie on the call and Joey Mack hosting our pre and post game for the Oregon Sports Network. We heard from Tosh Lapoy today as part of the Rose Bowl media availability, and we hear quite often from a lot of from the coordinators over the course of the week and position coaches and stuff like that, but it's not usually the extended and longer form, which is what we got today from Coach Lapoy. And I found it interesting the when you heard Lanning in his Rose Bowl media availability and now Lapoy of how their scouting kind of took place. And we talked about this a lot of would you rather be the 5 seed or get the 1 seed? And it was always to me like, no, you want to win, you want to get a bye, you want to be a conference champ. Is the path harder? Absolutely it is. But both Lanning and Lapoy have mentioned over the last week that one thing that they did from the onset is they went into self-scouting mode. And when you have this elongated break, I think something that to take into consideration with Oregon, right? They played the 8-game gauntlet of Big Ten conference play, right? No other team in the conference had that. No team next year will have that. 8 straight conference games, no bye week. They had the bye week before the Washington game. And when you have a bye week, it is self-scouting. You look within, all right, what do we need to do? How do we get better? What are our tendencies that we need to break? Where are teams trying to expose us, and what can we do? Something that Oregon benefits greatly from is you had that self introspect when it was the bye week before Washington. Then you play 2 quick games and you had the ability to sit back and say, all right, we looked at it and we had just 2 games. One of them went about as good as it could in the UW game. And then we saw Penn State came and we had a really good team that they were firing away. And they hit us with tempo. They hit us in some soft spots. They exposed some of the things that we needed to take a look back and sit back and look at. He said that Big Ten championship game, it was like they did a good job. They out-executed. I said this earlier in the show when talking about Ohio State and the Rose Bowl matchup. Tempo has given Oregon problems. And it gave Oregon problems in the Big Ten championship game. And I feel like the first 5 days of that, you know, okay, exhale, we have a bye, we know what we are off. It was, all right, how do we rectify that? How do we get lined up more quickly? How do we end up putting ourselves in a position where we can still disguise and bring pressure from places that offenses least expect it, but do it against a tempo team? Because if I'm Ohio State, that's what I'm keying on, is we've got one of the best up-tempo play callers in college football history in Chip Kelly. And a team that's where they have struggled on the defensive side is when teams try to get up to the line quick and go. And it's interesting that both Lapoy and Lanning said that it was a lot of self-scouting the first few days, but they also had the ability to start scouting both Tennessee and Ohio State before those two teams played. And that's a big advantage because you look at their tendencies and you say these are what their tendencies have been over the course of the season. and then you see the best shot, which is that game, and then you can throw out a lot of stuff and you can cherry pick. This is what Ohio State believes is their best offense. And the preparation for Ohio State and Tennessee, that was happening before that game was even played. And now you can just narrow it down a little bit more. I think that it's going to be really interesting to see kind of from the defensive standpoint. It really is. They're going to line up and it's going to be execution is what wins the game, right? On the offensive side, you can learn a lot about how you think Ohio State is going to try to defend you based on the extra preparation and being healthy in that rest week and that work week for the Oregon Ducks. All right, I will talk to you guys next from Pasadena, California. I'm excited for the college football playoff quarterfinals. I'm excited for the Rose Bowl. We will see exactly how this thing will play out. It's hard to beat a great team twice. No primetime today. We're handing off to ESPN Radio coming up next. Have a great weekend, everybody.